This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of September 12th, 2021. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 203. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest, the Is It Just Me commentary, I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker, and the big deal feature, the countdown is on. Justin Trudeau's pandemic power grab election day is September 20th. Hear from the Breaker.News roundtable with political commentator and Vancouver Overcast podcaster Mike Klassen and former BC Solicitor General Cash Heed. Also, the whistleblower in BC's casino money laundering scandal testifies at the Cullen Commission. Hear from Ross Alderson, the former anti-money laundering manager at the BC Lottery Corporation. But first, is it just me? Is it just me or... Dateline, September 4th, 1971, Washington, D.C. Headline, drug urged to curb power, use on politicians vital to man. The Associated Press reported that the president of the American Psychological Association suggested development of a drug to be administered to successful politicians to prevent abuse of power in public office. Beyond this initial step, Dr. Kenneth Clark said such a drug might be useful for all mankind, quote, to contain human cruelty and destructiveness, end quote, and perhaps eliminate such social curses as racism and war. The story went on to say that Clark, the association's first black president, said politicians should be the first to receive such a drug because they hold, quote, life and death powers over mankind, end quote, in this nuclear age. The alternative to Clark's proposal was the ultimate destruction of the human species. Clark said the drug should apply to the man aspiring to be a city councilman, right on up to the incumbent or aspiring president of the United States. He urged international agreement and pre-testing so that it did not turn humans into robots lacking creative, evaluative, and selective capacities. He suggested the drug be tested first on criminals. 50 years later, we are now in the age of varying degrees of coronavirus vaccination mandates. What if there was a truth serum mandated for politicians? The Trump presidency would have been very different. Maybe it never would have happened. Justin Trudeau might still be a drama teacher instead of the Prime Minister of Canada's most corrupt government. British Columbia could have been spared the Christie Clark premiership. And what about Putin in Russia and Xi in China? Who needs a cure for the common cold when the world needs a truth serum for politicians? What do you think? Email bob@thebreaker.news. This is the big deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. This is the big deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. We're welcoming Mike Klassen, a civic affairs commentator and podcaster with the Vancouver Overcast podcast, and Cash Heed, former Solicitor General of British Columbia, former Chief of the West Vancouver Police, and former Deputy Vancouver Police Chief. And the topic is this federal election, this unnecessary federal election, which all wraps up on September 20th. Prime Minister Justin Trudeau wants to turn his Liberal minority into a majority. Signs are saying that may not happen. The English debate happened on September 9th, the only English debate. Who won and who will benefit the most?
Well, Bob, this is a democratic event. You can't call it unnecessary. I mean, the fact is that people like to get out there and exercise their vote. And now that we're getting down to the short strokes in this campaign, I think we can all agree that most people were more interested in perhaps taking a little break during the summer than focusing on this campaign before Labor Day. Up until the English debate, it's also been, I think, a very small group that have been paying attention. Now that this is, we're getting down to the, you know, very close to the final election day on September 20th, I think that the public has really been a range of emotions on this one. It feels like anything can happen. I think perhaps one of the more exciting things about this election is just the fact that we don't know what the outcome is going to be. The polls are extremely tight. If you look at some of the analysis provided by polling groups across the country, the Liberals seem to be holding strong in Quebec and Atlantic Canada, where they have votes. They seem to be almost neck and neck in Ontario. Erin O'Toole is finally starting to kind of resonate with the voters, just because nobody really knew who he was before. British Columbia seems to be a very strong place for the Conservatives right now. Jagmeet Singh has focused almost entirely on his campaign on attacking Justin Trudeau. We'll see if that works, but all it tells us is that he thinks he's a nicer guy than Justin Trudeau. It doesn't say a lot about what the NDP are planning for the future of Canada. There's been also a lot of questions about the numbers behind his plan and some questions about whether it's even feasible or not. So I think what'll be really fun to see is just to see how the numbers start to tick towards the final election day. I think right now it could go either way. We could potentially see the Liberals tightly pull out a minority government, or the Conservatives might be able to surprise us and also have the ability to form government as well. So that's what makes Canadian elections interesting, and this one's no different than that.
Yeah, Cash, the debate had a lot of criticism for it, for its format, for the way the leaders handled themselves. But who do you think won the debate, if there was a winner, and who do you think will benefit the most en route to Election Day from that English debate?
I don't think it made much of a difference for the people that have decided so far, and even the ones that haven't decided so far. I'm not sure that debate really made a difference in their way of thinking. I agree with what Mike has said. I think, importantly, if you check some of the media headlines, they're talking about the comment that Sachi made with respect to what is going on in Quebec. She called it a discriminatory law versus just calling it a particular law. And I think that is kind of overridden some of the positive aspects that either of these leaders could have gained from that debate. I've got to be right up front with you. I did not watch the entire debate. I had other things in my mind that were more suited for me, given the time frame of that. But at the end of the day, I don't think it's going to make much of a difference. I agree with Mike that we're looking at either a Liberal minority or Conservative minority. I think the important question is who's going to prop up either side? My feelings are that if the Liberals get a minority once more, you'll see the NDP most likely propping them up. And the interesting part is, if the Conservatives form a minority, I think you're going to see the Bloc prop them up. So I think that is what we can kind of anticipate. And if I can use the term, look forward to on what's going to go on here in Canada. I don't think it was an unnecessary election, such as others are saying. We've seen these political people move forward trying to jump on the back that we have this crisis going on with COVID. We had it here in British Columbia. I think the only government that got voted out was in Nova Scotia. So it'd be interesting to see what happens, but I think we're due for another minority government here in Canada.
What do you think the biggest issue is that's not getting attention, or just generally which issue during this election is getting too much attention? What about those issues on one side not getting enough attention, or not getting any attention at all, or being overblown, that is really not as relevant to Canadians? Mike, what do you say?
You know what? It's surprising to me that we haven't had a bigger talk about healthcare. Healthcare is usually one of the more incredibly important issues of people. Obviously, it falls under provincial mandate, but the funding comes from the federal government. And there's been a lot of criticism that we've seen through, of course, with how long-term care was able to respond to COVID. There's been a lot of calls for additional investments into healthcare for older adults adults in Canada, that issue is just completely kind of faded off the national dialogue right now. One of the things that I've been working on is looking at both the issue of climate change and also our changing demographic here in Canada. If we are going into another four-year mandate for our government, by 2025, we're going to be on the cusp of a very serious change in the profile of the Canadian population. We're going to get to that point where one in four Canadians are going to be over the age of 65. And by that time, we're going to be into a 10 or 15 year stretch of increasing demand for healthcare, an elderly population that is going to be really struggling. That's going to cost our economy billions, and it potentially could create a real lag in economic output. So those are the kinds of issues that I hate. I think politicians don't really like to talk about, but the fact is that it's really important to the future of the country. And so that's one area that I think I would have liked to have heard more cogent ideas about how we're going to get ready for that change and how we're going to prepare for the aging demographic and provide health care for Canadians.
Cash, what do you think the biggest issue is that's not getting attention, or an issue that's getting too much attention?
The economy, and there are reasons why it's not getting attention, because it's not resonating in the minds of voters right now. They have so much to worry about and be concerned about, their health during the pandemic, trying to make ends meet during the crisis that we're going through right now, trying to deal with their children. So in my opinion, that's the largest issue, but you can understand why the leaders really are not pushing this, because people are not looking at the large deficits that we are continuing to carry. And I think we'll continue on that particular theme, and it won't be a major issue going forward, regardless of who is elected. There'll be promises, but whether they're kept on the economy, I'm not sure. But I have to agree, there's three other areas which I think are critical issues. And Mike mentioned one, health. Health has always been on the radar when we go to any election, whether it's municipal, provincial, or federal. But I think two of the other issues that need to rise to the forefront are the social issues, because we're impacted so much by those social issues, which also include the racial divisions that we have within our country. But the other one is the environment. And I've seen what is going on here in our local media and even in our international media of what's happening not only in the United States, but around the world and here in Canada on all of those environmental issues. So I think those are the other three issues that really need to come to the forefront and resonate in the minds of voters. So those are the issues that I would like to see focused on in the next week or so.
Yeah, Trudeau called this election on the day that Kabul fell to the Taliban while the fourth wave of the pandemic was accelerating. I called this unnecessary, and Mike, you took exception to that. But I stand firm on that, because this election didn't have to happen until October 2023 legally. They've basically broken the contract with voters that there is a fixed election date, and the minority was functioning. This was not a dysfunctional minority, and the Governor General, the new Governor General that Trudeau installed, did not tell him to go back to Parliament to test his confidence, which he could have and should have done. But here we are with the days counting down to election day, and the polls have narrowed. That Trudeau came into this expecting to have a cakewalk, that Erin O'Toole wouldn't resonate with voters and was an unknown, and that a majority would be easy. The polls are saying it isn't going to be, and the polls are also saying it's unlikely that the Conservatives are either just above or just below the Liberals. Was this a mistake? And how do you think this might finally end for the leaders? That could we see a wholesale change in leaders if it does end up being a minority? I mean, if it does end up being a minority Liberal, then will Trudeau and Erin O'Toole have a best before date? If it does end up being a Conservative minority or even majority, possibly, how quick do you think the Liberals will decide on changing the leader?
Well, Bob, you know, I do think, you know, I do support what you say in that this was probably an election didn't need to be called at this time. And of course, it is, I think, a reflection of how voters are feeling, that we're seeing the ascendance at least through polling that's been released of the People's Party of Canada, which in some ways the PPC, as they're called, doesn't look like the PPC of 2019, which had a lot of social conservatives attached to it. This one seems to have taken on a bit of a new form, not unlike what we're seeing in the United States with the Trump-influenced Republican Party, a real groundswell of discontent. The rallies that Maxime Bernier have been holding in British Columbia and towns and as well in other communities across Canada are hard to ignore, just in the same way that the stadiums that Trump fills up also can't be ignored. There's clearly a lot of people looking for at least some validation of their own worries and suspicions around about how the country is being governed right now. I do think that when we come out on the other side of September 20th on this election day and we see the numbers, we're going to see this swell. I'm not sure if we're actually going to have a seat for the People's Party, but I don't think we're going to see the close of the chapter of that part of Canadian political life that for me is very concerning, because it seems to be not one that is bound by facts, but more by emotion. And I really worry that that may be, and largely as a part of, I think, the disruption that COVID has caused, something that we will be wondering what happened after this election and as a result of the growth of the People's Party.
Yeah, definitely. The People's Party has been a very big surprise. We've also seen the slow decline of the Green Party. Cash, what do you think has been the biggest surprise of this campaign from your perspective?
I think Jagmeet is the biggest surprise. I think he's done fairly well, at least the people I've talked to, the people that are listening to him. In BC, I think he's done extremely well. But what's the troubling part of it, when people go to that booth and they're going to check off the person that they're voting for, I think they're going to shy away from that. They're going to look at the two people, the two parties that actually have a chance here, and that is going to be either the Liberals or Conservatives. So I think Jagmeet has done fairly well. I know, you know, he can say whatever he wants. He can promise whatever he wants. He does not have to, you know, provide the documentation, the numbers, because we know, and realistically, we know he's not going to be the governing party, whether it's a minority or majority here in British Columbia. But I think he's resonated well with people that have been disenfranchised from Trudeau's behavior. And I think he's capitalized on that. What that turns out to be at the end of the day, whether he can increase his seat count, remains to be seen. But I think he's been a somewhat of a good surprise. I think he's saying a lot of what people really believe and want. But at the end of the day, I don't think it'll sway them if they're you know, truly conservative or liberal voters here in Canada.
Well, thanks again for joining us, Mike Klassen, civic affairs commentator and podcaster with the Vancouver Overcast podcast, and Cash Heed, former Solicitor General of British Columbia, former Chief of the West Vancouver Police, and former Deputy Vancouver Police Chief. The Cullen Commission is almost over. British Columbia's public inquiry into money laundering heard on September 9th from Ross Alderson, the former BC Lottery Corporation anti-money laundering manager. Documents that Alderson leaked in 2017 revealed how BC casinos and real estate had been corrupted by a flood of dirty money from China connected to figures in the drug underworld. Without Alderson, the Cullen Commission may never have happened. This is a clip of BC Lottery Corporation lawyer Bill Smart cross-examining Ross Alderson on September 9th.
You became increasingly frustrated in 2017 by near the end of the summer, Mr. Alderson. What I gather from reading your will say is you're frustrated with the lack of, well, let me, you tell us what you were increasingly frustrated with.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I think, you know, much has been said about BCLC and my attitude towards them. And I want to put it on the record that the BCLC AML team, some of those individuals are second to none. And there were individuals that were trying to do the right thing. My frustration stemmed from the fact, and I'm in a bit of a unique situation, Mr. Smart. I'm not from Canada. I've lived all over the world. I've lived in, had the ability, and I came to Vancouver, and I looked at what I believe that city deteriorate over a number of years. I was quite taken, as a former police officer, quite taken aback by these gangbangers driving around parts of Vancouver unabated, and coming from a country where there were stronger laws against that sort of thing. And just the lack of attention to what I saw as criminality. You know, I had high hopes for when the policing unit ticket came into fruition that, you know, that things would be done. I've given evidence about a meeting in 2012, the BCLC there was, that I was very unhappy about. I took the role as director because I thought I could make a difference. And we did, myself and my team and a lot of the management team there. And from that day in 2015, when Cal Crusty and I had that conversation, I believe that there was a a triumph dismantling of our organisation by regulators, to discredit BCLC because of their failures to act. And when you have a regulator that rams down your throat that they're responsible for integrity concerns and they request reams and reams of information belonging to suspicious transaction reports, when in fact, then their management turns around and says, we don't have any authority to investigate it. And the police are looking at these things. They're receiving this information, and I saw nothing being done. And I, the more I got involved, I became on the board of directors of the Certified Anti-Money Laundering Group in Vancouver, and I saw how many of these patrons were linked into real estate transactions, into other transactions, that these were people with criminal links, and I was getting information from police. And not only that, some very concerning links to the Chinese Communist Party. And I felt that a lot of what was being undermined, I mean, Smart, I lived in Amsterdam when I was 22 years old. And it was the first time as a country boy from New Zealand was really had my eyes opened about drug problems. But when I came to Vancouver and I would drive from Vancouver head office to the downtown area to go to my meetings, I would drive down through Hastings and Maine, and what I saw down there, it's just, you don't see that too many places in the world. It's disgusting. And I just, the whole thing to me was distasteful. And I felt that I was in a position that I had the information that this needed to be out in the public forum. And that was my frustration.
And that's why you spoke to Mr. Cooper.
It was.
Yeah. And do I understand that, B, because in part to protect and support BC Lottery Corporation?
I was frustrated on behalf of BCLC that the government were controlling the narrative. And I think they've tried to do that ever since. And I think that it's unfortunate.
Mr.
I mean, you have. So, that was part of the frustration. That I believe my initial conversation with Len Mayer in Victoria in 2015 was you guys got caught with your pants down. And, you know, it's been a finger-pointing exercise ever since. A flurry of audits. When the AML team were trying to do the right thing, they were getting smashed with audits, taking up all their time and everything else so people could deflect from their inaction over many, many years.
You were frustrated with law enforcement.
I was frustrated with many things, Mr. Smart. But law enforcement, as a former police officer, I'm very disappointed in law enforcement in Canada. And I think you've had former police officers testify about their inability to prosecute the big stuff. When you have Director of Intelligence for the RCMP, who's alleged to be selling secrets to third parties, I think that tells it all.
That was whistleblower Ross Alderson from his September 9th testimony to the Cullen Commission on Money Laundering in BC. Justice Austin Cullen's report is expected before Christmas. Alderson referred to Cooper. That was Sam Cooper, author of the book Willful Blindness. He also referred to the RCMP intelligence official Cameron Ortiz, who is going on trial in 2022. Ortiz is accused of breach of trust and violating national security.
I, Justin P.J. Trudeau.
No!
Sunny ways, my friends. Sunny ways.
September 2021, Conservative Erin O'Toole versus Liberal Justin Trudeau.
We have not stood up for the 300,000 Canadians in Hong Kong. We've not fought for the two Michaels and put pressure on the communist regime. We have not stood up for human rights. Sir, you did not show up for a vote declaring a genocide towards the Uyghur people. You didn't show up. Canada is the country that was leading the fight against apartheid. We created the UN Human Rights Code. We should be leaders for our values, sir. And you've let the Michaels down, and we have to get serious with China.
If you want to let the Michaels and get the Michaels home, you do not simply lob tomatoes across the Pacific.
September 2016, Liberal Foreign Minister Chrystia Freeland.
This trip is aimed at restoring, refreshing, strengthening the Canada-China relationship. We're quite proud. The Prime Minister has been given a fond nickname in China.
Which is?
He is called Tudou, which I believe means potato. And he is, I can't say the Chinese word, it's Xian Tudou, little potato, because his father, Pierre Elliott Tudou, was senior potato. So we feel we are off to a great start. I do want to thank our Chinese host.
It's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim. In Kyoto news, Athletes Village closes total Tokyo Games virus infections at 878. A total of 323 coronavirus infections were recorded during the Tokyo Paralympics, bringing the combined total for the Paralympics and Olympics to 878 since July 1st. The bulk of the Paralympic-related infections, 236, occurred among Japan residents, with operations staff accounting for the largest portion. Para-athletes accounted for 13 infections, coaches and other games officials 54, media members 18, organizing committee members 14, volunteers 11, and overseas staff at pre-games training camps 7. In the Taiwan news, Google reveals mass pro-China misinformation drive claiming COVID started in the U.S. Experts at Google and security company FireEye said a misinformation campaign that claims the novel coronavirus originated from a U.S. military base has expanded to social media platforms around the world. This operation reveals China is serious about pursuing the kind of international propaganda techniques often used by Russia, the experts said. In the Hong Kong Free Press, Hong Kong National Security Police raid shuttered Tiananmen Massacre Museum a day after vigil group leaders arrested. The June 4th museum in Hong Kong was shut down in early June, 3 days after it was reopened with a new exhibition. Organizers, the Hong Kong Alliance in Support of Patriotic Democratic Movements of China, said the decision was made, quote, to ensure the safety of staff and visitors, end quote. The raid comes a day after police arrested the alliance's leaders after they refused to hand over information as part of a national security probe. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
Time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
In the Oregonian, neighborinos say hi diddly ho to new Ned Flanders Crossing in Northwest Portland. Portland's newest car-free bridge has a new neighborino. Northwest Portland's Flanders Crossing Bridge was renamed Thursday morning in honor of the beloved Simpsons character Ned Flanders, known best for his piousness, luscious mustache, an unflaggingly positive attitude. The Simpsons creator Matt Groening grew up in Portland and has named several characters from the long-running animated series after Portland streets. The projected cost for the bridge grew over time, finally topping out at $9.5 million. In the Seattle Times, ex-Seahawk Marshawn Lynch brings Beast Mode to the restaurant world. Beast by Marshawn Lynch and Kamaiina, a partnership between Lynch and Kamaiina chef Kevin Yamada, is expected to open by October at downtown Portland's Broadway Tower. The new restaurant will be a Hawaiian cuisine and sports-themed restaurant and will take up 3,200 square feet at the northeast corner of Hotel Vance, a just-opened Marriott property with 180 rooms. Many of Beast's dishes will draw inspiration from Lynch's Filipina grandmother, who raised the potential Hall of Famer in Oakland's cultural melting pot. In Czech news, ocean cleanup returns to Victoria with 8.2 tons of plastic from Great Pacific Garbage Patch. After their first 6 weeks on the water, a crew from the Ocean Cleanup Project docked in Victoria. The Great Pacific Garbage Patch plastic accumulates at the ocean surface, brought there by converging currents. It stretches 1.6 million square kilometers, twice the size of Texas. Most of the trash is coming right from our beaches and shores. That's Cascadia calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
Virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to people who are seeking a cure for Parkinson's disease and people who are caring for those who are living with Parkinson's disease. This weekend is the annual Parkinson Canada Superwalk fundraiser. Go to parkinson.ca for more information and to donate. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar. Send me an email to bob at thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca.
Vaccine. I'm begging of you, please don't hesitate. Vaccine. Because once you're dead, then that's a bit too late. I know I'm trying to be funny now, but I'm dead serious about the vaccine. I think we all want to get back to normal, whatever that is, and that would be a great shot in the arm, wouldn't it?
That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of September 12th, 2021. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on September 12th in 2011, the National September 11th Memorial and Museum opened in New York? Now you know. Send me your feedback, send me your story ideas to bob at thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. That's patreon.com/thebreakernews. Until next week.